Syrup and Static and Prayer, written by Safely Capricious and read by Flower Parish. This is a Heated Rivalry fic, rated mature, featuring the relationship Shane Hollander / Ilya Rozanov. Summary. 5 times people got a glimpse of Shane's unique relationship with the hockey arenas, and the one time they were forced to see the truth. This is part 2 of Singing the Song of Arenas series. Cliff had only been at the rink for 20 minutes and has already stubbed his toe twice and has a darkening spot on his shin that's going to be a pain to explain. Mainly because he swears he was watching where he was going and the bench fucking moved, but here they are. He was going to start with weightlifting, but honestly, he's a little worried he'll drop a weight on his goddamn foot with the rate he's going, but cardio seems unappealing with how badly his toes hurt. So he's just standing there like a dumb fuck when Rozzy bursts into the room. "Marley," he cries, which is a normal way for him to be greeted, but there's definitely an edge to Rozzy's voice, like Cliff just fucked up a play and they lost because of it. "I didn't do it," Cliff says, instinctively, and then Rozzy is grabbing his arm and putting something on his wrist and... When Cliff was younger, one of his teammates convinced him that the TD in TD Garden stood for Thunderdome. And obviously he knows better now, but it's forever how he thinks of her. But he's never felt her. Sometimes, in the quiet before a play, he fools himself into thinking he can, that her presence is there at his back. He doesn't really, but it helps him at the time, so he lets himself pretend. But it's not like this. This is like syrup going straight down his throat but filling him up inside, around his organs, sticky and sweet. It's not entirely pleasant. He gags a little and folds down onto the floor and realizes abruptly that he's crying and... "What the fuck?" he asks, once he has the voice to do it. Rozzy is just staring at him, eyes wide and wild. Cliff looks down at what Rozzy has put on him, and it looks like a cuff of a shirt, stretched wide around his wrist. There's a matching one on Rozzy's wrist. "What the fuck?" he repeats, and forces himself back to his feet. "It is charm," Rozzy says. "I visited Hollander, and he said he thinks someone cursed him, not you, but that maybe it rubbed off on you during the hit. He is safe in the hospital, so he gave me these to keep safe. It works, I think." Cliff touches it, and his mouth tastes like maple syrup again. "You sure he didn't curse us with these?" Rozzy scoffs, rolls his eyes. "Hollander is boring. He would not curse anyone. If he wins because someone is cursed, he would hate that." Cliff nods, slowly, because that does track with what little he actually knows about Hollander. "Yeah, okay," he says. He doesn't mention that he doesn't want to take it off. The thought of taking it off makes him want to cry again. More. He's still going to talk to the arena witches before practice, though, just to make sure. His mouth still feels sticky sweet with syrup. Yuna knows that she's been lucky, that Shane has been lucky. Compared to other athletes his age, he's rarely been injured. Actually injured, that is, not just small things that he can shake off with time. Still, seeing him in the hospital, high on painkillers, makes her want to forbid him from playing any more hockey. Almost. Obviously she would never, not that he'd listen to her about that anyway. But still. After only 2 weeks since his time in the hospital, he comes to her and asks to be driven to the rink, and she has to bite back her first 2 refusals. "I want to go see the guys at practice today," he says. His arm is still in a cast. He's still got bruises on his shoulder and under his eyes, and there's been tightness around his mouth since they lowered the dosage of the painkillers. I don't think the doctor would approve of you even putting on skates, she points out, hoping to get him to see reason. His jaw tightens, and she knows this look. It's not pain. I won't put on skates, he says. I just want to wish them luck. David touches her back, a gentle reminder, and she sighs and agrees. Still, when Shane puts on sunglasses for the car ride, it is not very bright out. She tries again to talk him out of it. He ignores her and asks about when his Rolex shoot has been rescheduled to, and she does not grind her teeth about it. She still half thinks he's going to make a break for it and try to put on skates, which she recognizes is illogical. Shane at 12 would have tried, maybe at 15, but not past that. And he doesn't. He chats with the guys and waves her off. She still hovers, but tries to do it unobtrusively, in the background. He does follow them onto the ice, but he just stands there, still in his Reeboks, and goes still. She wonders if he's praying when his eyes slip closed. She prays to the arenas often to keep her boy safe. This is still the arena he took a hit in, got a concussion in, so her prayers don't do much. It's probably different for him, though. And when he turns back around, steps off the ice, he does look lighter. If it wasn't impossible, she would think the bruises around his eyes had faded. She's sure he's not holding his jaw like he's still in pain, and she thinks, now, that it wasn't stubbornness or pain, but worry. A hit like that, maybe he was worried that getting back on the ice would make him panic. Oh, her poor boy. She loops her arm through his good one, and he lets her drag him off to lunch before bringing him home. He doesn't put the sunglasses back on. Scott has never believed in anything as much as he believes in Madison Square Garden, until Kip. When Kip's sock charm is able to help him keep steady, keep focused, even on away games, he realizes that it's true love. Because the charm isn't enough to get caught by the league witches, so it has to be more love than charm. Still, it takes Madison pushing, voice clear through the static telling him to go for him to be brave enough to kiss Kip, to call him down to the ice and kiss him like he wanted. Like they both wanted. And Madison was thrilled about it. Scott knows it's why he hasn't got as much shit from the team or the coaching staff as he would have otherwise. They all felt how pleased the arena was, and they know better than to risk upsetting her. So it's weird when he steps onto the ice for warm-ups against the Metros, and he feels that same strong thrum of joy. And like, Madison is always happier about some teams on the ice than others. She fucking hates Seattle for some reason that Scott has never been fully able to parse out. And she does generally enjoy the Metros, but this is a lot. This is on the level of the kiss, and Scott doesn't know what to do with that. He glances quickly around the ice. No one is kissing anyone or doing anything unusual. It's preseason, even the crowd is small. Across the line, Hollander is doing stretches and appears to be petting the ice. Scott had noticed he did that during the first All-Stars they'd played together, and then clocked that he did it in every arena. Or, well, at least in New York and Montreal and wherever the All-Stars were. Warm-ups weren't usually shown on television unless something dramatic happened. It's weird, but Hollander is a weird dude. So, no one is actually doing anything unusual when Scott looks. He sends a question to Madison. Listening to her is like listening to a radio station going in and out of range, usually just static with occasionally a word. When the push to kiss Kip had come, he'd gotten a full sentence and emotion, no static, clear as ice. This time, he just gets that buzz in the back of his head and then,
aim here.
He focuses, tries to get more, but just gets that same snip over and over again. And then it's time to get off the ice and for the game to start. Jimmy hates his team a little bit. He would never say that to anyone but his family, of course, and he tries to edit himself for his mom so she doesn't worry, but I just think it's suspicious. His captain, Joseph Simonson, is saying loudly, far louder than he needs to in the fairly quiet sports bar they've come to lick their wounds in. And it would be one thing if he was drunk and just talking overly loudly, but he was being quieter until the journalist had come in. They'd all tracked it, all recognized the man, and then Simi had gotten loud. That we keep losing in Montreal. I tried talking to one of the arena witches, but she wouldn't even give me the time of day. Seems fishy, you know? Jimmy takes a pull from his beer to stop himself pointing out that the reason Montreal had won at home was obvious. Simi had convinced one of the D-men to target Hollander every game they played, and they'd gotten lucky on the third of the series, the first one at Lenovo, and Hollander had been sent off the ice with a concussion. The hit was bad enough, and illegal enough, that Denmark's had actually been suspended, and Simi didn't even care, and Jimmy doesn't actually hate his team, but he does hate Simi. Denmark's he just feels bad for. It's only Jimmy's first year on an MHL team, and it's only Denmark's second, and it's obvious he didn't want to hurt Hollander, but he did. Anyways, Hollander hadn't played any of the third game or fourth game, the ones they had won. The fact that he was back for the fifth seems like bad management to Jimmy, but if Hollander was feeling any of that hit still, he certainly wasn't showing it on the ice. The fact that Simi is putting it down to location is just such bullshit, especially because the next game will be back at Lenovo, home ice for them, but Hollander is obviously going to be playing, and unless someone takes him out, it's unlikely that the Fogs will be making it out of the first round of the series. But the journalist in the corner is writing things down, and Jimmy is not surprised when he wakes up the next morning and it's a thing. Which is how the Fogs end up playing the Metros in fucking TD Garden for Game 6, and Game 7 if they have to, but Jimmy is not holding his breath. Simi is so fucking smug about it too, like he's managed to convince himself that actually they are as good as the Metros, and only lost because they were in Montreal, and being in Boston is going to cure all of their problems. Like the Metros don't win just as many times as they lose in Boston. It's such fucking bullshit. He can't believe the league is entertaining this, doing a full investigation into the allegations like they weren't just shit talk in a bar from a captain of a team that was going to be kicked out of the first round of playoffs, who only made the playoffs as the lowest seeded wild card because everyone else inexplicably shit the bed. Jimmy sighs on the ice and sends a quick prayer to the garden that she'll watch out for them, keep them safe. And if he adds an extra prayer that she keep Hollander especially safe, well, whatever. It's not like any arena has ever heard of him or anything. JJ was raised religious. His grandpère taught him, at his knee, all the do's and don'ts of picking his arena. His grandpère told him that he was only ever to pray to one arena, that it was bad for the soul to be unfaithful like that, that regardless of what his teammates said, he wasn't to be swayed. He told him that he should only pray to his arena once he had played in her, bled in her, cried in her. He told him that he should not be so arrogant as to expect to ever hear back from his arena, but if he was true, then once he had chosen his arena and prayed to her, then he would never be traded from that team. That the arena would keep him safe. He still isn't sure if he believes it all, but he'd waited until he'd ended up at the Metros to pray for the first time, out on the ice, after a game that had left him with a split lip and tears in his eyes. They had won, and he had prayed. This is the team. This is the place where he wants to stay. And he never does hear from her, but playing on her does feel different than playing anywhere else. That used to be a good thing. But ever since Shane told the team he's gay, it's been bad. Shane had told him and Hayden, and it hadn't changed how things felt. But then he told the team, and now playing is wrong. JJ doesn't know if any of the others notice it. He tried to ask Shane once, and Shane had just stared at him blankly, But Shane never did talk about religion. He's got his superstitions, but he doesn't even seem to like to talk about them, let alone religion. And JJ doesn't like to talk about religion to the others. Like his grandpère said, they do not believe like he believes. Or if they do, they lie about it. They talk about her like she cannot hear them, sometimes, and it makes JJ uncomfortable. But not as uncomfortable as the arena feels now. Still, he always takes a moment, both before a game and after a game, to pray to her. He never hears anything back, but he thinks it helps. Something is still wrong, though. Hollander, don't bother suiting up, Coach Thoreau says, as soon as he walks into the locker room and everything freezes. Coach, Shane asks, evenly, but Hayden can see the tension in his shoulders and his grip on the pads he was about to pull on is tight. You're scratched, order from Cromwell, Thoreau says, and he sounds somehow both gleeful and pissed about it. Gleeful because he's still pissed off that Shane told the room he was gay, probably, and now more vindicated that he's found out about Rozanov. And pissed off because they are almost certainly going to lose against the Crusaders without Shane playing. There have been a few times when Hayden has imagined punching Thoreau, which is probably what keeps him from actually standing up and doing it. God, Hayden still feels terrible about outing Shane and Rozanov, even if Shane has forgiven him. Hayden will punch Brad if he ever actually meets him in person. Camo mumbles something from the far bench, and Hayden would bet Ruby's college tuition that it's at best a veiled insult about Shane, and most likely a slur, as noise returns to the room. Thoreau seems to be waiting for something from Shane, but Shane just breathes and puts his pads back down, and Thoreau turns to go. No, Shane says, but it's not Shane. The voice is soft, and it's Shane's voice, but it's not Shane. Hayden knows Shane, and this is not Shane. The voice is soft, but it cuts through the noise in the locker room as effective as a whistle. Hayden is paralyzed with fear. He can't move. There's something next to him, and it's not his best friend, but it is his best friend, and the faces he can see across from him look confused, not frightened, and how is he the only one who can hear the wrongness? He will play. What the fuck are you? Thoreau says and turns around, and goes white as a sheet. There's an indrawn breath from the room, and Hayden forces himself to turn, to look. Shane is still sitting on the bench, but his head is tilted up and his eyes are glowing white, pupilless. His mouth is an rictus of a smile. If you do not let him play, then no one will play. We love him. I don't. Cromwell is the one who decides, Thoreau stutters. Who is we? A voice asks, and as whatever is puppeting his best friend turns to look at him, Hayden realizes it was his voice. The arena's, of course, not Shane says. He doesn't blink, and his eyes are fully white, so it's not like it can look like he's being examined, but Hayden is sure he's being examined. He cares about you. If you play when he cannot, we will do our best not to kill you. Oh, good, Hayden whimpers. The white gaze looks over the rest of the room, and the smile sharpens, and it turns back to Thoreau. The list of who he cares about is small. Is that your fault? Someone starts to pray, softly, across the room. I'll call Cromwell, Thoreau says. See if I can talk him around. Not Shane tilts his head in acknowledgement. Better do it quickly, Not Shane says. If he makes it into Madison Square Garden without reversing his ruling, we may have to eat him. Thoreau flees the room. Hayden can see a few of the other guys are considering it, too, and then Shane goes limp, and only instinct has Hayden catching him before he crashes off the bench. Shane, he tries. Buddy, you okay? Yeah, Shane says, and it's him again, his warm weight leaning against Hayden's side. Just sucks that I got scratched. Hayden fights back a hysterical giggle. The end.